Welcome to the Collector's Cast, where we both learn and teach about collecting and the world of collecting. I'm your host, Clint Wilson. With me, as always, my co-host, Mike Blosky. How are you doing today, Mike?
Hey, great, Clint. Thanks. Yeah, we're here to teach and talk about and just generally celebrate the art and hobby of collecting everything.
You're right. It's hard to describe collecting. You call it an art, you call it a hobby, you call it a fascination or whatever you want, but a lot of people do it for a lot of different reasons.
A sickness, an obsession.
An obsession, that's the one I was looking for. Yeah, when you start stalking items. When you're at 2 in the morning standing looking through the window of the antique store dreaming about something. I don't think that actually happens. In the news today, what the heck is going on with the price of signs?
Absolutely crazy. The price of vintage signs, and be they tobacco, oil and gas, or just off-subject signs.
Signs in general are through the roof. The inflation is rampant in the world of sign collecting. On this this episode, we're really going to try and capture a lot of information regarding budgets and picking on a budget. And we're going to try and teach and learn how to get better deals. But again, signs are through the roof right now. There's no way to go out and get a cheap sign. It's like saying, how do I get cheaper gas? The answer is you can't. But knowing the market is important. And hopefully I can teach you a couple of things about signs and where you want to go as a beginning collector.
With that said, Clint, if I just butt in here for a second.
Yeah.
Is there still people out there, though, that will have some old sign tacked up against their shed or there's something that's sitting there, and they have no idea? To them, it's just a rusty piece of tin in their way. So I guess to say there's no way of finding a cheap sign, you're not going to buy a cheap sign off of a collector, but there are signs out there.
There are. Typically, most people have seen American Pickers and other shows and that tell them, you know, Pawn Stars, things like that, that tell them the astronomical prices of some of these signs these days. But you're right that they were used at one time by farmers just to repair fencing, roof panels, whatever, and just some old sign. Who cares what it says? And guys are digging these out now. And, you know, these old Coca-Cola signs and stuff like that are thousands of dollars that were just, you know, used to patch a hole in a roof. We've seen some crazy stuff recently. I think the one that floored us both was, now tobacco is always very collectible, tobacco advertising, because let's face it, people are smoking less these days and it's going the way of the dodo, but everybody loves a good tobacco sign. And Mike and I saw this Black Cat tobacco porcelain sign sell at auction for, you were there, $12,000 for one sign.
I couldn't believe it. I thought about the cool vintage speedboat I could buy with $12,000.
Yeah. Or the time you and your dad used one of those Black Cats to fix the hole in the barn.
Oh, my Grandpa Tom, he smoked Black Cat tobacco. And when I think about how many Black Cat tobacco cans there must have been out on our farm in Saskatchewan. Ugh.
All worth big money now.
I wonder if they're still there.
Yeah. So when you're trying to buy signs and you're new at the game, there's a few things that make signs different values. One of the big ones, forgetting for a second, the difference between a legitimate, real advertising piece and a fantasy piece or a copy that somebody has made after the fact. But some of those copies can be worth some money, too. And I'll touch on that a little bit, too. Size is a big thing. If a sign takes up 4 feet of a wall space, it's going to be worth a lot more than something that takes up 4 inches. There's just no getting around size is money. The material it's made out of. Metal is always preferred right now, but cardboard is coming up. And press board, And during World War II, when there were embargoes on using steel, or sanctions, I guess, placed on steel because they were using it for the war effort, a lot of sign making on steel was banned, and you saw them going to wood and pressboard and other options. And another thing is the content of the sign itself, what it says, the colors, the graphics, how good does it look to the eye? That's what gets me about signs, is they appeal to me, their look, their colors. They're not so much their message even. It's just the way they look, the way they grab you when you first see them. Mike's got a couple signs beside him here. Now, the two different types of metal you're going to see typically are painted tin, and then you're going to see porcelain enamel. And what Mike's holding here right now is a porcelain and enamel sign. It's a very simple sign. It says ammonium nitrate. So it would have been in a factory somewhere. The subject matter of this thing is not great. It's just a white porcelain sign about 2 feet long and maybe 5 inches high in red letters, ammonium nitrate. Now, what I can tell you about that sign right now, based on the red letters, based on my knowledge, is using the color red in porcelain was stopped sometime in the early 50s because the materials that went into it were very toxic. And you won't see red in signs on porcelain after a certain date. Now, maybe they've done something now in modern times to fake that. I'm sure they have. But when you're talking original old signs from the 50s, if it's got red in it, it's usually pre-50s.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and just being porcelain makes that worse, more than, say, a tin sign of the same size. Now, here we got another little porcelain guy. Now, this is a prime example of an aftermarket sign. And for our audio-only listeners, it's a little Morton Salt porcelain sign. It's about maybe a foot high by 8 inches wide. And it's just a little, but the image is great. It's a little girl holding an umbrella in the rain. And the graphics are neat because they show a picture. It's got lettering that pops out, you know, white on a dark blue background. Now, this is a sign that was probably made by a guy called, or a company called Andy Rooney. And factually, I found out that Andy Rooney is not a guy. When I hear Andy Rooney, I think of the old, what do you think of when you hear Andy Rooney? 60 Minutes, right?
Yes.
But it's not that Andy Rooney, it's A-N-D-E Rooney. And it was a lady, I found out, is Andy Rooney, as a woman's name.
Interesting.
But her signs are famous for being collectible fakes or knockoffs or reproductions, would be the nice way to talk about
that. Clint, how do we know that this is a knockoff?
You know, personally, if I had a real one beside it, all I could go by is wear and tear myself. I don't know the facts on it. There are guys out there that get so deep into this stuff. They'll tell you, well, the real one would be a quarter inch wider, and the holes in the corner where the grommets are wouldn't touch the white outline. They'd be inside of that, or some crazy little fact about it that helps you. But what I go by typically is wear and tear. And for one thing, that sign is either new old stock, what they find when they find a box of brand new ones from the 30s that never got put on a wall. But that's very rare, and a lot of things are claimed to be new old stock when they're not. But, you know, mainly I go by condition. That's just too clean to be an old sign. Now, Mike's picking up another one here. Now, this is where we could show you. This is painted on metal, but this is an example. Mike's holding a flange sign right now. And that bolts on the wall on a flange and then sticks out at a 90 degree angle. 45 is an angle, 90 is a square. Edit that out. I sound like an idiot. Mike's holding a painted on metal flange sign from the Batrail Shoe Company. And it's amazing. It's got beautiful graphics. It's two-sided and the images are different on both sides. The other side has a tree on it and a little leather awl and a bat that they would use for some kind of the shoemaking process. And it says Tree Brand Shoes on this for sale here. And like I say, go to where are they going to go? To our website to look at pictures. Tune into our YouTube channel, I guess. For those of you audio-only listeners who want to have a look at this thing, go to our YouTube channel and check it out. But it's just a beautiful example. Now, this is a sign here that I personally value at about $1,500 because it's from the 1920s. It's a flange. It's double-sided. The graphics are amazing. The colors are amazing. Other than being porcelain, this sign checks all the boxes, and it's rare. So, you know, you want to own something like that, you're going to have to step up. If you want to own something that just looks like that, you can go out and find reproductions for sure.
Well, this sign is amazing. Like, holding it, you were saying 1920s?
Yeah.
Right? And, like, you know, I'm taken aback for a second because I'm holding this sign from the 1920s, and it's in very, very good condition. And
but you can see the difference between it and the Morton Salt
absolutely,
sign. And that there
absolutely.
Is slight signs of wear. And you can, it's very hard to mimic slight wear.
Absolutely. And I can tell just by holding this thing and being this close to it that it's old.
Yeah.
That it's not something new that's been scuffed up. It's old, and it's a beauty.
And that's going to be a thing that you guys are going to learn following this show in future episodes, is that recognizing the difference between a modern fake and something really old really does start to come to you. The more you hang around stuff, the more flea markets you frequent and estate sales, and the more old stuff you look up and pick up in your hands and handle, you definitely will get a feel for what's old and what's not. And it's something that just time.
And hey, I can attest to this because I'm not a sign guy. Like, if I want to put a sign up at my place, I probably would go for a reproduction because I want it to be bright and cheery. But what I can say is this, is that over the past year, Clint's knowledge of signs has skyrocketed. And just being around him daily, I can just see it. He comes home with a sign or brings a sign to the shop, and he knows exactly what he's got. You knew about signs. Of course, you knew a fair amount. But your knowledge has kind of went from pretty good to really good.
There's still guys that
well, maybe there's guys
run
that are
circles around me.
Yes, but yours is good enough now to be in the game.
Yeah, I could sit at the table with the big boys for sure. Yeah. But in every specialty of collecting, you will always find experts that know more. Never think you know everything. I learn something new every single day, and that's what makes me bounce out of bed with a spring in my step in the morning, is I'm going to learn something new. And I never, ever think I know everything, and you never will. So watching me collect and deal in signs for a while now, I'm wondering if you've picked up anything. Let me ask you, as a potential guy who's going to pepper your walls with signs down the road, what would you do? How would you go about buying signs on a budget? How would you start?
Well, I think my approach would be almost like anything. If I was buying a boat, motorcycle, vintage firearm, or a sign, and I want to do it on a budget, I would have to first buy one that was in not very good condition. Maybe, you know, a sign that was rusted already, and maybe the you know, a lot of the lettering was just condition. The simplest way.
And that's
poor condition is going to be cheaper.
When I went down the differences in price, that's something that I forgot to mention. And you're right, amazing. Size, material, content, graphics, condition. And that's a huge one. But like Mike says, you start out with a really rough one, and then down the road you find one that's a little better, and you trade up. You sell off the one you have, you buy the one that's a little better. And you're always renewing your inventory and making it nicer and nicer. So you'd start out maybe with the rough ones, maybe a few of the knockoffs, because they look good. If you don't care, it depends if you're a purist or not.
Yeah. Hey, if I am not in the business of selling signs to make a profit or anything, for myself, a knockoff sign is fine, because why I want it is the way it looks. So that's...
If 99 out of 100 people walk into your personal little garage at home and the wall is just peppered with cool old gas station stuff, Shell and Golf and all these big bright colors, and then are they going to notice that they're not vintage signs? Are they even going to question it? They're just going to go, wow, that guy's got a really cool looking garage. Yeah,
because for me, I'm really just doing it for the look that I want.
And that's fine. And there's some people that can do that and be happy forever with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. And if you don't want to spend $100,000 putting signs in your garage, do that. But if you're a purist and you want to really collect the good stuff, it's going to take an amount of money. No matter what your budget is, you're going to have to spend. And then, my friends, I just suggest you get good at it. You spend the time. You do your research. What Mike said before in the past to me many times, the internet is your friend. You will learn so much there, more than we can ever teach you. You know what? Let's swing back to the signs for a second. Going back to the materials. During World War II, as we said, that steel was limited. So they started doing stuff on press board and fiber board. And some of these signs can actually be quite valuable too. It is one of the cases where a non-metal sign can be worth a lot of money because people go, hey, I get it. You just weren't allowed to use metal back then. Mike's holding up a fiber board sign for DeKalb Corn. It's spelled D-E-K-A-L-B. It's written on a cob of corn with a wing on the top. It's a really neat graphic, actually. Here's a case where bright colors and graphics jump at you. That's just a great-looking sign. It's press board, but compared to the ammonium nitrate sign, which is porcelain, it's 10 times better looking. So, you know, again, subject matter, graphics, it looks great, but not a metal sign, still worth money.
Very cool. I remember in the, growing up, there was a lot of furniture and stuff that, you know, my grandparents or people had, and it was a lot of this pressed wood type of stuff where you'd have like an old wardrobe and it was made out of this. Part of it would be wood and part of it would be this pressed board because it was just sort of a natural evolution, I guess.
Or was that because growing up on the prairies, they didn't have any trees?
We had one tree.
And they cut it down to put on that shoe sign.
Yeah.
I think what we're going to do now is take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a very special guest. Hi. And we're back. Welcome back to the Collector's Cast. We're here today with our guest, Lyric Kennedy.
Hello.
Who used to be known as the Junior Junker. She's still pretty junior. She's...
Well, I'm almost 20.
19, almost 20 now.
Almost 20.
But she's been doing this game since she was 11 years old.
Yes.
And today on our show, we've been talking a lot about buying on a budget, picking on a budget. And I think you're probably an expert on that, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, totally. Let's start. What got you into this?
I started collecting for my grandmother. And she liked anything Victorian and white and vintage for her house. So I went to garage sales and estate sales. And I would wake up really early on the weekend. And I would go and see if I can find any estate sales.
And you did this to find stuff for your grandma?
For my grandmother, yes.
Dorothy?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Dorothy.
Her grandmother is great.
And then I just met ladies who do vintage markets. So I was like, what is that? I don't know what that is. So they told me it was like a flea market, but all antiques and collectibles. And they actually said I had a really good eye, and they let me start picking for them for about a year at age 11.
Great.
So wait, you would go and actually pick for other people
for other
at
people
age 11?
At age 11.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And find them stuff they could sell. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everything you buy pretty much sells, doesn't it?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, that is a sign of a good eye. I remember that when I first met you, I thought that is one good sign of a good picker is everything she buys pretty much sells.
Yeah.
So you're finding what's desirable to other people. That's excellent.
Yeah, so, it can be hard though. Like figuring out like does brass sell now and then does like copper sell now and then it comes out of style and then you're
constantly
like, what
changing
is going
market.
On?
You're right. Yeah. We haven't covered that on the show a lot yet. Is the constant changing of the market. What's hot this week might not necessarily be the big thing next week. You're very right to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
What would, going back to the budget thing, how do you find is the best way to get deals? What's the best way? Do you buy in bulk or do you just your eye is so good or what?
When I go to estate sales, I will try to buy in bulk just because if you just go and you like offer, like ask questions on just one item or two items, they might be like $10, $15. If you put it together, you can be like, oh, will you take $10 for both of them?
The bundle.
The more, it's better the bundle, the more they're getting out of their house and you get more deals, I find.
Yeah, Lyric, do you find that with estate sales, people are just trying to get rid of stuff or are they trying to make money?
You have to really read the people. Yeah. I find it depends, like, if they just want to get rid of everything. Sorry, what was the question?
No. ADHD. I was just thinking it's a darn good question. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. No. What is their motive of selling?
Motive, yeah. Like, just reading the people and, like, seeing if, like, they want to sell. Oh, my gosh, I don't know. I'm blanking out.
If they just want to. Yeah, I guess there'd probably be a couple of different types of people. People would say, oh, we got this estate of my grandma's or my uncle's. We're going to make a bunch of money on it. Or people, we just want to get rid of this stuff so we don't have to take it to the dump or clean it up. Or right?
Yeah, so it all depends, like, who it is.
So read the room. Read the room early.
If you see them, like, giving people boxes and, like, saying just shove things in, like, then you know, like, you can make
a
big, big
pile.
Yeah, pile and, you know.
But if they're getting real chintzy and you see them arguing over.
That happened to me last week.
What, the people were chintzy?
Yeah, we went to an estate sale with my mom and and we thought, you know, they were just going to get rid of everything and I would make a big pile. But I made it a big pile and they said, like, maybe, like, 20 things on the table is $350. And I was like, that's way too much money.
Well, they're taking what they would sell each individual thing for, $5, $10, $15, like, and adding them up without giving anything off.
Well, they were asking me, like, how much would you sell this for? And I'm like, that's a red flag right there. If they're asking how much I'm going to sell it for, that means they're going to try to sell it to me for that price. Yeah. So if you get that when you go to
You want to be polite with people and try to stay on their good side. But I also think the first thing in my mind is, what business is that?
It's not their business. But
yeah, it's not your business.
You do want to respect them and, you know, some of them know, like, the prices of, like, what something's worth. And you do want to give them a fair offer.
Now, I've seen you work before. I've been picking with you. And it's quite something to watch. And you mentioned maybe you got a bit of ADHD.
Yeah.
I don't want to poke fun at that because it's a serious affliction, but I do notice that you jump around from subject to subject quick. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. Squirrel.
Squirrel.
You're you're all over the place.
I am a squirrel.
You're trying to confuse the seller.
Have you ever had to?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you find that you have to dial it back with some people or are they just?
Oh, some people actually at the Antique Mall in Fort Langley, they're like, you're the girl that bounces all the time. I'm like, yeah, that's me.
Mm-hmm. I have trouble concentrating on one thing for too long.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Exactly.
Exactly.
I don't know.
So what's something good you found recently? You got any good finds? Have you been picking lately?
Nope.
Since?
Been slacking. Now,
a lot of people don't realize
actually,
this.
No. I was just on our way here. I saw a estate sale sign.
Okay.
So we went to go find it, couldn't find it, but on the side of the road, I found a cast iron vintage Christmas tree.
Really?
And it's in the back of my car now.
On the side of the road?
On the side of the road.
That
so
is.
Always look in the free bin.
The ditch pick or the dumpster pick is the
best.
Oh,
yes. I go dumpster diving too.
The free stuff.
Have you gone dumpster diving?
Yes, I've done it.
I've dumpster
diving. Good job. See, these people are my people.
Yeah, dumpster diving all around. I've always done it. Yeah.
Yeah. HomeSense is really good.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not only
does she dumpster dive, she knows where the good dumpsters are.
Yeah.
You could sell a map to pick them.
I should be quiet.
You should sell a map to the
no,
the best
no,
dumpsters.
My dumpster.
I won't say where, but I was actually banned from a dump because I was I'd go in there and I'd dump like 200 pounds worth of stuff, but I'd take back like 400 pounds worth of stuff when I was leaving. They'd be like, this is impossible. You weigh more when you're leaving. Yeah, so I can't go there anymore.
Yep.
I had a snack while I was here.
What about metal detecting? Have you done that?
Oh, no. Are you talking about the fishing magnets?
No, the metal detecting.
Oh, like actually on the
beach?
We're
totally getting off track, I think.
No. That's a way to find stuff. We're talking about collecting
stuff,
here.
Yeah.
And a lot of collectors do use metal detectors. It's kind of an old thing. Have you ever gone to the beach and found stuff? What do you found?
Coins. In the States, mostly, I find like older coins. Lots of bottle caps and lots of pull tabs. But Keep going. You can do
it. True story about metal detecting. Years ago, I went and stayed down on the Oregon coast, and I bought a metal detector, like a kind of a mid-price range one from London Drugs or something like that. And I took it down there, and I was all excited. Once we get there, I'm going to go on the beach. I'm going to metal detect
and
find all this treasure. No, I had batteries. I had it all working.
Okay.
Get out. I walk through the reeds out onto the beach, first time ever, and I get about 10 feet. Beep, 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 beep. Things picking up something. So I get a little shovel, and I got with me. I dig up, and there's this awesome knife. I found this, like, a big dagger with an ivory handle, and it was super cool. Oh, this is great. After that, for the whole rest of the 3 days, all I found was, like, bottle caps and, like, the pull tabs off of cans and stuff. Nothing good. But the first 2 seconds, I found that knife.
Well, you know, Clint, our good friend Ted Lyon, I borrowed his metal detector because a friend of mine, I had given her a ring.
Oh.
And she was feeding horses and threw the hay, and the ring flipped off her finger, and she could not find it. So a couple weeks went by. She didn't want to say, hey, I lost that nice ring you got me. And I said, where'd you lose it? She said, in the pasture. I said, I'll find it. I borrowed Teddy's
metal detector.
Yeah. I went out there one day. Of course, it was pouring rain. Spent about an hour. I was just about to give up. And found the ring. Horses had trampled it into
That's
the
That's amazing.
I mentioned fishing magnets earlier. I know you bought one. I have one too. But I've yet to try mine out. Have you taken yours
out yet? So we have to go do it.
Have you done yours yet? No?
Well, I told you my phone dropped off the bridge, right?
Yeah, you dropped your phone off a bridge.
My aunt came to the rescue and helped me with my the magnet and got my phone off a 50-foot bridge.
So it was able to pick your phone up? It was able to pick it up?
Yeah.
The magnet was? Okay,
yeah,
there was enough
I dropped it, and it was able to pick
it
up.
I did not realize there was enough ferrous metal in a cell phone to be picked up by a magnet.
Yeah, we were actually scared because the phone case came off.
Oh.
And that's the important stuff. It has my debit and everything in there.
Oh.
And so I got the phone case first because of this little metal piece.
Oh.
Ooh.
And then my phone just came up after.
But I should explain to the people listening in that the fishing magnets are they're just a big, powerful magnet on a string. And they're used for people dropping off bridges and into water, and they drag them and they pick stuff up. They're very powerful. And apparently it's a thing where people find all sorts of stuff that people throw off bridges.
Well, a kid in Surrey actually found a grenade by throwing it over.
Okay. Wow.
Off the subject of grenades, what is the most interesting item? I know that that's going to be hard, give me a most interesting item that you've picked in the last 2 years.
Oh, 2 years. So my most favorite pick that I went on was in Washington, just across the border. And I went to an estate sale. It was jam-packed full. And I'm going through these drawers, and all of a sudden, I find a film case taped underneath in the drawer. And I'm like, what the heck's that? So I untape it, take it out, and I open it up, and it's full of silver quarters from the 1900s.
Wow.
And there was about over 80 of them in there.
Wow.
I quickly looked it up online. I was literally shaking of excitement. I was crazy. They were worth about $130 each.
Each. Wow. And there was 80 of them.
And there's 80 of them. And then I went continuously into the drawer and found the books, and they're also silver quarters as well. So what I did is I went up to the person of the house, and they said that their family actually lost the coins, but they've already sold the house. So I found them and brought them up to them. And obviously they didn't sell them. I did really want to buy them because that would be so cool. But they actually gave me everything else that I wanted to buy for free in the house because I found it.
Yeah. Whoa, that is an awesome pick.
Yeah.
I remember you told me that story before, and I was all excited thinking how you made all this money, and you're like, no, they didn't give them to me, or they didn't sell them to me. I was like, what? I'm like, did they at least give you a deal on the other stuff? And you said, oh, yeah, they gave me everything I wanted for free. And I was like, well, yeah, that's pretty fair.
Same thing happened to me I think a couple months ago. They sold the house again. They couldn't find the guy's passport. They couldn't find his, checks and money and everything. I walk in, I'm looking around the house. I was like, how tall is he? And she was like 6 foot. And I was like, okay, well, if he was that tall, he might have hid his stuff up in a closet somewhere. So I open the closet door, I turn around, and I put my hand on the top and I feel. I find shoes, a passport, and some checks. I found them. And then I got everything that I wanted to buy for free.
Well, that's awesome. Nice.
So,
well, listen, about, I don't know, a month ago, I lost my keys. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We should get you to come over and see if you can find
them. Oh, yeah,
because we've never found them.
Yeah, I probably
just
could.
Disappeared.
I'm, like, known, I have, good eyes to find hidden things.
She has to ask your height and weight and your habits, and then she'll find them.
Yeah.
That's an excellent story.
I'm not going to do that. I'm just kidding.
We're going to turn to a little thing we do called listener questions, and somebody sent one in, and maybe I've never heard it before. Mike's going to read it here, and maybe you can help us answer it. I don't know what it is.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
What do we have today, Mike?
All right, we've got a question from Laura Burke from Calgary, Alberta. Hey, guys, I love the idea of collecting old car parts and restoring them.
Cool.
But I have some butterflies about getting into the collecting world as a woman. I'm damn tough, but I'm a little uncertain about how to start. I was wondering if Lyric and or you guys had any advice or encouraging words that could make getting into this hobby a little easier for me.
Well, I'm going to start by saying that since neither you nor I are women, we could turn to Lyric first.
Ha! Putting me on the spot.
what advice do you have for a woman who... It sounds to me like she's worried about being intimidated and...
I would just say believe in your gut and just go for it. If you really enjoy it, just put yourself out there. I know, like, not a lot of women do it, but just know that, like, I support you and the vintage community is very supportive. So if you ever have questions, totally reach out. And just enjoy picking. It's so fun.
You know, you made a good point there that I don't think we've touched on or enough anyway, is the community that exists out there in the land of collecting and junking. There are so many cool people.
They're amazing.
And they all work in the same circles, so they all get to know each other. They're always at the same auctions, same flea markets, same sales, and you'll start seeing the same dozen faces everywhere you go. And in most cases, they're pretty good to each other. I think if there's an a-hole in a group, they get weeded out fairly quick.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to deal with them anyway, so
no.
You don't talk about them.
Yeah.
So, but regarding the old car parts.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I've got a little bit of advice there. That's a great idea. You know, we're talking picking on budgets. If you love old cars, cars are one of the most expensive things to collect. And not only do they take money, but they take room. They take know-how. They take maintenance. It's a big undertaking. You almost need like a fleet of people to do it with you. But if parts are a way to kind of show your love for that car, that old car, you know, just a hood ornament on a shelf
of
an old Cadillac or something like that, or hubcaps are a popular thing to collect. I think it's a great idea, and I don't think you can lose money investing in an older car part and just for display. Now, a car part typically is worth most when it's used for something, you know, that it was intended for. You know, you need a headlight for this specific year and model. That's when it's worth the most money. But until it gets so old and useless, nobody needs it anymore for the purpose it was meant for, except for maybe a restoration. Now it becomes more of a display thing and a physically just cool thing to look at, even
like
if
this.
It doesn't do. Yeah. Well, that's not this. Made from a real car, but yeah, you get the idea. And some people, well, if it did. If this
I was like, wait, it kind of feels like plastic.
If this was made, if this couch was made, it's for those audio listeners that can't see us, Mike and my guest sit on a 59 Cadillac couch. It's basically the back end of a car. If that was a real 59 Cadillac, though, that couch would weigh, you know, 800 pounds. So the fact that it's
made I've seen them make
less.
Them.
Yeah, they do. People
and
make
they
sell
real... like 1500 to 1700 each?
Yeah, they make real out of the back ends of cars, and they make barbecues out of the hoods of cars, and people do some really inventive things with old pieces of cars and car parts.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm just wondering, in Laura's question, I was looking at it, said, collecting old car parts and restoring them. And I think, Laura, that certain parts, like, say you find a hood from a 55 Chev, And I mean, that's a very sought after item. And you were to fix the boo-boos on that hood and completely restore it and maybe not paint it.
Don't paint it.
Leave it in primer. Well, because someone restoring a 55 Chev, you don't know what color it's going to be. But you may find yourself into a real niche market there where you're finding these particular parts and restoring them and basically having them ready to go for somebody who they don't have to buy it and start repairing it. So
I never thought of it from the resale aspect, but yeah.
You might have something there. I'm just rereading your question where it said, hey, guys, that you love the idea of collecting and restoring the old parts. Yeah. So you might have something.
But Lyric said something, yeah, whatever you do, don't paint it. And she said that for a different reason, and I'll tell you what she's meaning. That's if you find an old item that's got really old, rough paint, the paint is alligatoring, as they call it, cracking into those squares or whatever. A lot of people's first instinct is to, oh, I'm going to sand that down and paint it a nice bright red or something. You will ruin so many things by doing that. Don't paint anything without talking to an expert first, because people want that original patina. They want that original wear and that age to look the way it does. So just don't go scraping off the old rust off old cans or anything.
And don't try to polish an old gun.
No.
That's the worst. Yeah, an old gun.
Oh, is it like coins where you leave them dirty?
Yes, like coins. Just leave them.
Okay, I was not
leave them and take it to an expert.
Mm. Yeah, well, I know that by cleaning coins, you can devalue them immensely.
Yeah.
Mm. You're supposed to just leave them dirty.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that boils over into our last thing, which is a trivia question. I think Mike has a trivia question.
Well, thank you, Laura, for your question.
Yes, thank you, Laura.
Yes, thank you, Laura.
Yeah.
And thank you, Lyric, for coming on to our show and making us polite for a change.
I hope you have a great journey.
So trivia, yeah, you're going to ask us a question. I have no idea what it is.
All right. I'm going to ask this question because it's one of my favorite things. I have a lot of them. Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheels cars.
Yes.
Okay.
So when was Hot Wheels, when were Hot Wheels introduced?
Hey, Siri.
Day and the month.
Oh, day and the
year.
Month.
Year.
Well. Hey, Siri, when was...
Hey, you're not allowed to cheat. Yeah, no cell phone. Check anybody for cell phones before they play trivia.
Vintage, no cell phone.
I'm going to say late 60s, because originally it was Matchbox. Was made by Leslie in England. Mm-hmm. I know Matchboxes were the big collectible, but then Hot Wheels kind of got tricked with the customs and that. And the red lines are all late 60s, early 70s. Why the year, or the month, and the date? Is there some significance
to
it?
It was a specific date. What was, want me to just tell you?
The 70s?
I'm going to say, I'm going to say the year 1968.
It was 68, May 18th,
1968. Jeez. Whoa, look at that.
Hot Wheels
introduced. I was too off.
Their marketing campaign introduced.
Well, you're 2 years off.
I know.
Do you know why Matchbox were called Matchbox?
Because they fit into a matchbox.
Well,
because actually, I do know this because school children.
Oh, I like them. They're so cool.
No, I can answer this. I know the answer. Yes. Because school children in England were only allowed to bring a toy to school if it was small enough to fit in a matchbox.
That's right.
So the Leslie company started making cars to fit in matchbox cars.
Okay, that is so cool. Cars.
And the thing about the matchboxes is they looked like real cars back then. They looked like a real family man sedan or whatever it was supposed to be, whereas the Hot Wheels were tricked out hot rods a lot of the time. And when Matchbox started doing that, it was the wrong market for them. They did those Matchbox supercars, and they tried to do all these crazy inventions. It just didn't work the same. So Matchbox found out it was better to just deal in regular-looking cars and let Hot Wheels do the trick customs. And now Hot Wheels owns Matchbox, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Really cool. Do you have a lot of Matchbox?
No, just Hot Wheels.
Oh, Hot Wheels. That's what you said
just
at the beginning.
Hot Wheels.
Yep. What about you? You collect little cars. You bought some dinky toys off me and
have
stuff
some
in the past.
Dinky, yeah.
Well, mostly just for your displays, though, eh?
Yeah.
There's something about that adds.
Only
you
have
got a little
color.
Display on a shelf of some tins and some, I don't know, ephemera and whatever, the kind of stuff that you do, and then you put a little red truck or something there and just pops the whole image.
You mean a teal truck, because teal is my favorite color.
Teal is her deal.
Lyrics Vintage.
Lyric is wearing a teal Lyrics Vintage t-shirt. Your neon signs are teal. Everything you have is teal.
My slogan is Rescue and Relove.
Rescue and Relove. Cool. Lyrics
back
Vintage.
Back of my shirt.
I have a question for Lyric.
What do you want?
When you pick, do you find that you pick in a, or I don't want to get punched in the jaw here. Do you
Cobra Kai.
Find that you pick in a more leading toward females in a feminine way?
No.
Or do you just anything?
Anything. I'm more like, if I see a gasoline sign and I see car pieces or tools, I'll be in there with my hands all greasy in there.
Okay.
I stay away from China and glass stuff. Obviously, like I love like Clint stuff. Like, I would totally love to get into it, but it's expensive. But I go towards more like smaller items, like knickknacks that people can have like fit in the palm of their hand, yeah, type stuff. That's easier for me to sell.
I think what we're showing the difference here between what's known sometimes in the industry as mantiques and lady teaks. Mantiques are the manly man cave, gas and oil, cars, hot rods, blah blah blah. Whereas
I do both.
Lady teaks tend to, and I'm just speaking in general
jewelry
relative terms, tend to be the china and the glassware and the things
it.
Like that.
Hate it.
I don't disparage anybody for collecting anything. I think if you want to collect, please pick something and do it. It's a wonderful way to pass the time and become the expert at something. So whatever you do, just have fun doing it.
I'm total opposite. Like,
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's been a pleasure having you. For a young lady, you've entertained and educated here today. And I certainly hope to have you back again sometime.
Yeah, it'd be great.
One of our regular guests.
Whenever you want me to come.
Awesome. Awesome, Lyric. Yes, it'd be nice
to
have you. Nice to have you again.
Well, remember, people, if you need to send us questions or comments, it's feedback@thecollectorscast.com. We enjoyed having you half as much as you enjoyed watching. And that means that you enjoy watching twice.
Follow me on
much.
Instagram, Lyrics Vintage.
Lyrics Vintage. Clint the Collector. Michael
and
Blosky.
Woo.
Thank you all.
Take
See
care.
You again.
Bye.